Fastamai, hello and welcome to this episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. Villagers in Laxey have fumed at Manx utilities and government ministers over the flooding which devastated Glen Road earlier this month. We hear the views of residents from last week's public meeting, and in the second half of the programme, political members of the Climate Change Transformation Team say it's disappointing that the Eastern Area Plan inquiry took place before their climate action plans were ready. The chairman of Manx Utilities has apologised to all villages in Laxey affected by the major flooding which took place earlier this month. Around 200 people gathered in the pavilion at the Laxey Glen Gardens last week to question Dr. Alex Allinson and other government ministers over an event many saw as completely avoidable. Some who spoke were furious and claimed little had been done to prevent the flooding, with clear warning signs ignored by the departments involved. Others called for assistance over insurance issues and wanted promises that action would be taken swiftly. The Chief Minister has announced an independent review will take place into the extreme weather event. I was at the meeting and captured these villagers' comments.
Trees, rivers, grids, roads. It's not my job, it's yours. You have a duty of care to me and to every person in this parish, to every person on the Isle of Man, to do your job, and that is to keep the waterways safe, it's to keep the roads safe, it's to keep the grids clear, that when we have rainfall that you know we have, that it can go away and people's lives are not completely destroyed by it. It's really quite that simple, and I fail to see why it's taken a devastating impact like this for you guys to suddenly start doing the jobs that you should have done.
My insurance runs out in 2 weeks' time, and my insurance company have already said that they will not be covering me for flood. While you will be doing the review, I'd like to know what you can do to help us with such an urgent matter such as this.
The Glen Road has been flooded regular for donkey's years. These poor people living down the Glen, I'm sorry for them. If we had had a force 10 gale and a 30-foot tide, they could have been drowned or God knows what.
Some of the comments there of villagers in Laxey. Well, I also spoke to the man in the firing line, the chairman of Manx Utilities, Dr. Alex Allinson.
What I'd like to say is that we had all of government here, all the departments and Manx Utilities working together. And we were here to listen, we were here to take on board people's anger, people's frustration, and people's fear from what happened last week with the flooding. And what we've tried to do is to listen to that, to take that on board, to draw lines, so we can move forward with an action plan so that we can actually try to reassure people and rebuild that trust with them.
People hear your words, but some may be saying, why should we have faith in you?
Yeah, that came over, that people have lost trust in government for delivering. The Chief Minister has made it quite clear with the establishment of the independent review that he wants to listen, that he wants to take action, that he wants to move forward. And so we need to rebuild that trust. But it's quite clear also that that trust will be rebuilt by people seeing the benefit of government action. And that's what we have to do now, is actually get the right plans, the right schemes for Laxey, but also look wider at the other areas of the Isle of Man that are flooding and learn the lessons here so that the problems aren't repeated elsewhere.
Was a large part of the flooding the responsibility of Manx Utilities? That's what a lot of people wanted to hear you say, either yes or no.
Manx Utilities is responsible for flood management. So when floods happen, it falls on us. The Board of Manx Utilities instruct our chief executives to carry out plans, to carry out schemes, to try to preserve the environment. So yes, I mean, that's one of the reasons I was here, that's one of the reasons I gave the presentation, was people want accountability, they want to know who's made the decisions and they want to hold them to account. That's what we tried to do today.
People want to know, when will this review be concluded? When can the people of Laxey have some kind of resolution?
That's a very good question. The selection process for the person to run the review has already started. There is a lot of information that's come out. It's going to take a while to collate all that. I can't give you a date for when the review will be finished, but it has started already, and we need to make that review meaningful, open, transparent, but absolutely make sure that the outcomes for it are positive for Laxey.
National and local politicians in Laxey have welcomed those promises of action. I spoke to them, but first I spoke to former commissioner and local businessman Andrew Smith. He's been helping villagers compile evidence on how their homes were affected by the devastating weather event. I got his views on the meeting.
Andrew Smith, firstly, what do you think of this announcement of £500 for each affected resident? Does that go anywhere to addressing any of the problems?
Well, I think it's a gesture. Obviously, people would, when they've been devastated by flooding such as the residents on the Glen Road, then they would say, well, it's a drop, you know, pardon the pun, it's a drop in the ocean. But I think government have realised that there is an emergency, and the Treasury Minister obviously has responded to that in probably is limited in his way that he can. So it's a good beginning.
Well, how about the other promises you heard here tonight about what's going to be happening?
Well, again, sadly with politicians, they make promises and as we've heard before, they've never been followed through. On this occasion, I think because of the serious nature of what we've just witnessed in Laxey, I think they recognise that on this occasion they've now made those pledges, both obviously following what they've got on the screen, which is in writing, and also in front of all these people, which is also being followed by media. So I think to myself on this occasion that they will actually stand up and be counted, and I sincerely hope that.
Now, you're collating everyone's personal experiences, everyone who's affected. You're asking them to put together images, reports, what have you, of what happened, how they experienced the flooding. Why is it you're doing that?
Well, I believe that if we have this small dossier for each property, which is backed up by factual evidence, so copy emails, copy letters, photographs, and either for this event or indeed for previous flooding events, we can then pinpoint all these various properties on a Laxey map relevant to where the waterways are and the tributaries, and then we can determine what's flooding, what's surface runoff, what may be caused by insufficient drainage. So by doing that, again, we are collating local information in one document that we can then pass on to government, rather than, I think, the government being inundated with emails from all and sundry with no coordinated, necessarily, you know, effect.
There's a lot of talk about how the government are going to appoint somebody, an independent expert, to look at the whole situation. But there's a lot of discussion about how local knowledge is actually perhaps even more valuable to them. Is that what you're hoping to impart by what you're doing with this work?
Well, yeah, definitely. And what we'll do is with this report, which will be a live document, so it will be continually updated, we can keep passing this to this advisor so that he is constantly aware of that local input. And as I also reiterated at the end of the meeting, what we will be doing as this local group and local residents, we will actually be monitoring it. So as and when government puts some things in place, we will actually monitor that, and we will ensure that they are actually achieving what they set out to achieve in a timely fashion.
Were you pleased to see particularly Dr. Allenson standing up and taking the anger of residents and taking their concerns and owning up to some degree to responsibility for what happened?
Yeah, I think it is important. Yeah, they did actually acknowledge responsibility, and that's what they voted in for, and that's what they're paid to do. You've got to be accountable. You've got to be have responsibility, and you need to have a duty of care to the island's population.
Martin Perkins, MHK for Garth. I think the anger and the fear and I think the hurt in some ways that they just hadn't been listened to by government.
And what do you think are some of the key things they're wanting now moving forward? Because we've had a lot of announcements from government, the £500 from Treasury for affected residents, the review obviously announced by the Chief Minister, but what do residents really want?
They want to see action, they want to see the river cleared, probably up to 10 metres either side of the stream, of any loose timber that will come down and cause blockages. They want to see action on planning, a moratorium on development above the housing line. They don't want to see water coming down from above on new developments.
And is this what you want as well?
Yeah, I think, well, I've been listening to the people, and you know, how many times have I heard it didn't happen until those houses were there? And you know, this is underlined this evening. Dr. Allenson's done a very good job in reassuring as far as he can. Nobody can say 100% that we're going to solve all the problems in one go, but I believe that the Chief Minister's inquiry into it all will come to, their things will come to light, and we will get a roadmap of what we intend to do as a government, and there will be dates when things will be achieved by.
Are people right to be sceptical, though, as we have been here before? Well, Laxey's been here before.
Yeah, I think there was a bit of a flurry of activity after the 2015 flood, but I think this is different. I think all departments have realised that they have to get their act together, and it's across departments, and it's communication, making sure it's fed back, and the commissioners as well. You know, they need to do their part, and myself and Mrs. Kane, we need to make sure everybody is aware of what's going on and the actions that are being taken.
Daphne Kane, MHK for Garth. I am really pleased that the three ministers and Alex Allinson for the MUA were here to face the people and to give some explanation and accountability in terms of what went wrong last week and why we're in this situation. The devastation of residents, the multiple number of people who've been flooded for repeated times, you cannot express that on paper as well as hearing the impact on them. The growing sense of frustration is that nothing's been done over so many years. And one of the things I referenced was a 2006 report by Acclimatise that Dolgey commissioned into the impact of climate change. And Laxey bucked the trend of everywhere else having less rainfall, in that they said even by the 2020s we'd be having significantly higher rainfall and runoff. Where's that report gone? And that report and all the subsequent ones that were done following every flood in the meantime, especially after 2015, you can sense the anger from people that they went nowhere, they've not been done. And even from days before and weeks and months before, both through us as elected members and also through the commissioners and the clerks, repeatedly we all have all been forwarding messages of concern and highlighting.
So why hasn't it been taken up? Why hasn't it been investigated?
I think they've had a wake-up call now, as they've said, to do it in a more coordinated way. But I think that was the complete failure of government to act as a cohesive force for good and to undertake their public duty of ensuring people are safe. So finally, we have something to hold on to. We've got to wait for the Chief Minister, who said he would publish the terms of reference for the review to members. I think with all the wealth of information, really knowledgeable people going back many, many years of where the failings have been, where the wood hasn't been cut, where reservoirs or culverts or drains just haven't been maintained. That's what we need. But in some ways, we don't want to wait for a whole review to be undertaken with recommendations at the end. We want to know if there are things that can be put right now, as Dr. Allinson and the MUA have been working really diligently and quickly in response to messages we've sent them in the last week to undertake reviews, inspections, and some reassurance has come back.
Is there the resources to do that, though? And is there the resources just to dedicate that to Laxey? Because I'm sure there are places all around the island that have issues with local authorities saying, look, we need Manx TLC to do this, we need the DOI to do that, and it's for whatever reason it's not being done. So, I mean, is there resource to do it specifically for Laxey?
I think that what came out loud and clear tonight is that since the gang system, the local gangs were removed, there hasn't been the consistency, the knowledge and the action that in a timely way.
So assuming they were removed to save money.
They were, we assume, especially as it happened since 2008 and the financial crash. But the Isle of Man is going to face potentially increasing amounts of claims, large amounts of money that will need to be spent to make people safe. So they need to do it in a more cohesive way now and address things from the very drainage up from the top of the valley in Igneash, reservoirs, flood drains, but also flood holding lakes and things like that. So we're not the technical experts, but the best thing to take out of today was that all the departments involved are listening, that the people have a wealth of knowledge, that if we can get beyond the anger and frustration, that could be channeled into the review, and that significant improvements need to happen. And I think the Chief Minister said they had a priority list following the last review of the flooding. Well, they seem to have solved Peel Road. They seem to have done work in Castletown and elsewhere, and that Laxey was the next priority. Well, they need to put the money where their mouth is now and sort Laxey out in a way that gives comfort to people and also comfort to insurance companies in terms of the people who were wanting to sell homes or just feel safe in their homes.
Well, let's talk about those finances. I know there's £500 been promised immediately by Treasury. Does that go any way to helping people?
No, I don't think it is, but it's something. And it says to me that Treasury and all the other departments are listening and they are aware that there is an immediate need. I think that's unprecedented on the Isle of Man. So it's a start, and it's welcome, and I'm sure that for some people that's going to be a bit of a lifesaver in terms of immediate expenses. But what we need is government to look at those people who...
I mean, are insurance companies going to listen to government?
If government can demonstrate that they have particularly sorted the issues of runoff water. Now, we heard today that residents all down Menorca Hill and at the foot of Menorca Hill, the businesses and residents who are there, they have been impacted over the last 10 years with the runoff from the main road, from additional development up Balearic and on the main road, Ramsey Coast Road. We have repeatedly raised this from constituents who've come to our surgeries and said they can't get out of their front door after a small amount of rain, not the amount of rain we had last week. So we've forwarded this, we work with the commissioners, we highlight the issues on the main road, and people from Corinne and the rest of me, thankful, they're telling me, yeah, but the main road is DOI and those drains haven't been inspected, those drains haven't been cleared. So there must be, we want to be reassured that there is a programme of work, but also a comprehensive plan put into place for the future that says these are all the mitigation measures that we've taken to prevent the water runoff as well as reduce the risk of the river itself flooding, and then we'll come to the sea defences and the sewage works ultimately as well.
Jamie Smith, Chairman of Garth Commissioners. I think we heard some really honest answers, and Dr. Allinson particularly, he took a lot of criticism, he took it on the chin, and he came back with some honest answers about things that are being done and that things will be done. I did speak briefly and said I was slightly frustrated that there's a lack of firm dates told us today, but he did say things are getting done now in these next few days, and I think the phrase he used was they're going to accelerate everything they can.
Why do you think people should have faith? I mean, do you have faith that something's going to be different compared to what happened with the 2015 flood?
What we were told tonight was that he hadn't come here to spin. He'd come here to genuinely listen, and he wants to restore people's faith in him, in trust in him, I think was the phrase. He wanted to restore people's trust in him, which I think is very reasonable of him, and he is here today to, as the minister, he is responsible to take it, the criticism, but he has tried to assure the residents that things will be different. He doesn't want to be here in 12 months' time. They don't want to be here again in 12 months' time.
Now, as the local authority, you actually sent images to Manx Utilities of the tree blockages further upstream. You'd alerted them to the risks. Do you feel a bit frustrated that your sort of messages to government about these issues weren't picked up on?
Yes, I think you know that the frustration has been the word I've used before, and that is still the case, and the residents know that, and I don't think the criticism was aimed towards the commissioners. We're not complacent. There's often things we can do better, but in this case, we really do feel we've done everything we can. We want them to... It's joined up government between the departments. I think they know that they haven't really done that before, and I think the lesson did get through tonight.
You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. The inquiry into the Eastern Area Plan has now closed, with Inspector Mike Hurley drafting up a report with recommendations for the government on its plan to zone areas in the most populated parts of the island. However, none of the plan will factor in work to tackle the climate emergency, including the report by Professor James Curran, the independently appointed expert. He's due to report back in January. It's disappointing news for members of the Climate Change Transformation Team, which is helping the professor with his report. MLC Jane Poole-Wilson and MHK Ralph Peake are part of the team. They appealed to the inspector during the area plan inquiry to be mindful of the report, but he said he couldn't consider it as it hasn't yet been developed. I spoke to those two politicians about this statement.
It's reality, isn't it? It is disappointing, you're absolutely right. It would have been, I would have much preferred the report to have come out ahead of the public inquiry, but this is where we are, and the report's coming out in January. I'm very much hoping that the report that comes out and the support I hope Tim will give it and its recommendations will then enable us to look at a number of issues around the Isle of Man, housing, public transport, active travel, all these things. I hope we'll fall in line behind that, because it really is a vision of a low carbon future, I think, is a massive opportunity for the Isle of Man. It's not just about heating our homes, it's about attracting businesses here that want to be here, it's about attracting people to the Isle of Man that want to be part of that journey. I think it's a fantastic opportunity.
Would it have been possible to request a delay by the Cabinet Office or to push this further down the line in any way to ensure that the report was factored into the planning process?
I understand that colleagues in Tynwald did raise the question, is it possible to delay it? I mean, I think one of the challenges is the climate emergency and how we address it is so huge that there will be a number of things going on around government that actually, if you stopped them now and said, hang on, we should factor in whatever comes out of the response to the climate emergency because it might affect how
which
we
was,
move forward with that.
Mr. Barrett, QC Barrett, who was representing the Cabinet Office, he made that point.
So I think whenever you do something as significant as this, there are bound to be things that are either just being signed off, about to be signed off, rolling on.
But there's not always a climate emergency.
There's not always a climate emergency. And so one of the things that I think a number of other people have tried to get across at the public inquiry is whilst we accept that the inspector is constrained by his remit and he can only make recommendations based on the evidence before him, hopefully, to the extent he can take account of this wider context. And, he did make a remark at one of the days that I was at that he felt that part of the problem at the moment was that some of the plans in the East have not been reviewed for years. Some of them go back to 1982, 1991, and it's a lack of active review that now leads to quite a lot of pressure to have a plan that plans out beyond 2026. Actually, you're right. We're not usually doing something like this against the backdrop of looking at how we're going to address the climate emergency. For that reason alone, I would say this isn't the time. This isn't the time to plan out beyond 2026. This actually is the time to hold ourselves in check and only plan for the moment based on the data we have. And there's a lot of question about our actual need, about our population numbers, our direction of travel on that. So only plan for what we really think we need in the coming few years, and then allow for the fact that, there is a commitment to review the strategic plan anyway in 2021. There are things in train to try and incentivise people to really develop our brownfields and our urban centres, the climate emergency and what comes out of that, particularly around land use. If we're transitioning to renewables, what does that mean in terms of our land use? Should we zone a lot of land?
Or focus on density?
Before we've had the opportunity to look at and think about all of these things.
Well, doesn't a good plan have inbuilt flexibility to deal with these kind of problems?
I think you're right, yeah, and I think it was very important to actually make that official statement that there was a plan coming because, you wouldn't want the inspector not to be aware of that. So I think it was very important to actually put that down and to say, yes, maybe it does need to be flexible. As you say, a good plan is something that's flexible. This is coming down the road and it's the biggest issue that any of us has faced, for decades. And so it is important to know that, be aware of it, and actually hear the feeling of members and statements that were made.
And I think the other problem is, of course, when it comes to development, people want some degree of certainty. And so where's the line between some flexibility and the certainty? And my argument at the moment would be give people certainty in a more constrained way. Don't give yourself so much flexibility that effectively if we zone lots and lots of land as strategic reserve for housing, it almost, there's a sense that it almost becomes inevitable that sooner or later that land might be used in that way. And my sense would be let's not shut down our options, actually, because if we move forward with needing to address climate or other policy initiatives come forward that say, actually, you don't need to build there, we could encourage more thoughtful and effective building in some of our urban centres, which would support active travel and regeneration of communities and so on. Don't give so much flexibility around too much land that you miss a trick to take on board these other things, whether it's about the climate emergency or otherwise.
Well, many would argue that the Isle of Man's strategic plan actually already has a raft of really positive policies, but it's how they're being interpreted and it's how they're being put in action, which is the question here. So there's already a plan which has protection of the countryside, sustainability at its core. But isn't it the actual application of that plan that is the issue when it comes to sustainability?
And I think also on that sustainability, and it does, it expressly says that prioritisation for development on brownfield, previously development sites and sites within existing settlement boundaries should be what happens. I think what you hear from people is, yes, but it's not very easy because brownfield sites aren't very easy to develop. Or, there are various practical factors that then come up that people say this is why it doesn't happen. So my answer to that is, well, here's an opportunity to look at what the barriers are and try and remove those barriers or try and put further incentives. And we did have the Select Committee report on previously occupied urban sites. Mm. And a big part of that was, this is what we could change. This is how we could turn this ship around and start to encourage that brownfield previously developed site development before we go out to our greenfield sites. But you have to allow a bit of time for those things to work.
It does beg the question, why is this coming before work on brownfield, work on climate? Is that fair to say? Yeah,
I think you're absolutely right. And from my position, I think it seems to be a bit ridiculous to see some of the best farmland here in the Isle of Man, the highest quality farmland, being turned over to housing. By all means, housing, you know, we do need it. How much we need, that's up for debate, I agree. But building housing on land that's either been previously used or has little value, that's where our priority should be. To consider high quality farming land that we may well actually really need in the future, to build on that is very disappointing.
The area plan process, there are many parties at play. How do you feel about going up against or debating with a very well-resourced developer lobby, which there is?
I have heard now from a number of members of the public about their sense of inequality of arms about this process, because, and I've witnessed it, I've watched it, it is very, very difficult. I know myself, I mean, I happen to have a legal background, but it's not in planning law and it's not in development. And there are obviously stacks of documents that have been generated through this process, which, for a kickoff, it takes a long, long time to read and process and then to generate your written evidence and then also to be able to come forward and speak at a public inquiry where people have expert barristers who are able to advance their case and also question the other person's case. That is a huge issue, I think. And I think, I'm not sure I have an answer, but I think it is potentially a problem. And I've watched the exchanges of evidence coming out, and you only get a sort of true picture when you've got both sides equally able to challenge each other's evidence and make the case equally as well. And it is very, very difficult for members of the public perhaps to have they don't have the resource and perhaps they don't have the expertise, and it's much more difficult. Having said that, some of them I think have been doing really, really brilliant
jobs. Some have described the experience to me as feeling more like they were in a courtroom than an inquiry.
Yeah, and it is the nature of a formal inquiry. So again, I don't criticise the inspector. It's the system that we have set up, but whether it allows people to be heard fully in the way that should really inform the outcome of the area plan is a different question.
MLC Jane Poole-Wilson and MHK Ralph Peake. That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this episode online as a podcast via the Manx Radio website or via Spotify. But for now, Gurumayu and goodbye.